something on the network. But
what's that?
The Cablevision thing. I think Cablevision. I'm going to check it out. Right. But I think that's the information. I think they have control over the program part of it.
I would give it 90% likelihood you're wrong. You'll be fine.
I'd
give it more like 99.5%, but I didn't want to just come out right out and say you're full of shit. I worked my way into it.
But I'm gonna test it though. Yeah.
You know, Bermuda is like, you know, first world country, you know, high capita GDP. It's not like we were in Guyana or something, you know. I think you're probably fine. I think they probably have a signed contract with, you know, HBO and all the guys.
Actually, I'm
going
to talk to my wife tonight. Say,
yeah, there you go.
I have to buy it tomorrow.
Okay. Okay, so we were talking about P&Ls and stuff. So let's take a look at this stat sheet here for a second talk about tracking your numbers a little bit more. Robert, do we go enough into the P&L for your taste?
I'm good. That's what I need to think.
Yeah. The comment you and Maya made offline was, you know, I hit three major numbers, didn't really hit the other stuff. And the Jonathan, why is your utility bill so high?
Did you see my
John? Can you guys speak up?
We live in Connecticut.
Well, I mean, the oil fired something or other, and it's just ridiculous.
It's
expensive.
An older building,
yeah.
But
I don't need your.
Yeah.
I guess the bottom line. I do pay. I mean, a 15% premium on my electric because I go for all renewable energy.
Guys, I can't hear anything.
I know you love
it.
We don't want you to hit us.
You don't want to hear what I'm saying. So,
we also have three conversations going on back there.
So, other than that, I have electronic thermostats. You know, my place gets cold at night and wonder, you know, only business hours. So,
or am I misreading? It looked like your utility bill was like $1,000 a month, $1,100 a month.
And this is something I was told a couple years ago by the actual heating company. Uh-huh. How far do you let your temperature drop in the school?
No, that's a good point.
55.
And then what's it go up to during class?
63.
Too much. The utility company told us if you let your temperature in your school drop anything more than 5 degrees, it costs you more to heat it back up than it would just to leave it.
I'd like to talk to somebody who understands physics about that, because my system, like all heating systems, is an on-off system. So like either it's on and generating heat or it's off and it's not. So I don't buy the science in that, but if someone can explain it to me, I will take it.
I could give a shit one way or the other, but you have like a $1,000 a month utility bill.
For how big a square footage?
Yeah.
5,000.
5,000, that's what it costs for my building, 10,000 square feet.
Yeah.
Two floors. So,
that makes it as double per square foot. There may be something else there. I had a location years ago that had been a women's health club, and it was running 1,000 or 1,200 a month in utilities. But you know, after the third month, I tracked it down, and I'm not sure this is true at anymore where we're at. But we used to have what was called a peak demand billing. So whatever your peak demand was during the month is the rate at which you got billed at for the entire month. And what I tracked it down was the facility had a sauna, a steam room, and a jacuzzi, and like 12 heated showers, none of which I paid for. I just walked into a women's fitness center. The only time that the sauna, steam room, and jacuzzi got used was at 9:35 at the last student out the door, and the instructor every night would go turn on all three at the same time and would peak the demand. So I was, in essence, paying $800 a month in utilities for one guy to use the sauna, steam room, and the jacuzzi, and tracked it down and had them all three disconnected. And my utility bill went, literally, I mean, the utility bill went from like $1,100 a month down to $300 a month.
Wow. Energy audit or something?
Something. I don't claim to be an expert. It's just it's a number that stuck out at me because it was high.
Yeah, $15,000 a year in utilities.
If I had a school that was more than $5,000 a year, I would be surprised.
Okay, so yeah, it's the only business that ever owned, so it struck me as unnecessary expense. So
my heating.
Well, it may just be that you're in Connecticut and it's cold, but then the utility rates are high. I don't know, but
my heating bills over the winter are $900.
Yeah,
but in the summer they're $3.
Right, right.
So they'll do a free energy audit. Our power. Yeah,
well, they have that in Connecticut too. So yeah, I'll take a look.
But he's paying the extra 15% to have the renewable energy. There's a great article that I have with me. It's in Motor Trend or Road and Track. And it's about the Fisker, it's a big four-door, beautiful car, plug-in hybrid, right? So it can go like 50 miles on electric. But it's the first time I've ever seen anybody do this, is they did a chart based upon all 50 states and what the rate per kilowatt hour is in all 50 states and what the carbon emission is relative to generating the kilowatt hour in all 50 states. And how burning a gallon of gas compared with using an electric based on each state. Mm-hmm. And I think their conclusion was in some states, plugging it in to get 50 miles on stuff was producing more carbon than actually burning gas. And in other states it was less. Like California has a lot of clean energy, and like Texas has a lot of cheap, dirty energy. And it actually compared it side by side. And I pay attention to all that just because I'm a contrarian. Don Sutherland's moved back out to Colorado, and he lived in California a little too long, so his brain had gone kind of mushy and all this stuff. So he and I are always having the debate about the clean energy, dirty energy, price and one thing or another. But it was a really interesting article.
What was the publication?
I've got it in the room. It's either Road and Track or Car and Driver. I think it had on the cover Camaro versus Mustang, but I picked it up because I like the Fisker. It's nice. It's about $100,000. Price point is about the same as the Mercedes S-Class, although I'm not sure they're ever going to get off the production line. Did they kill the company, or they just paused?
$70 million. I don't know. They don't think they're going to be able to come up with it. They need $40 million just to go to the next.
They burned $70 million of U.S. government taxpayer money to get to this point so they can manufacture it in the Netherlands. But it's a cool-looking car.
What is this?
The Fisker. Yeah, beautiful car, though. But on the P&L usually if you control payroll and rent and marketing, and you look at payroll both from a standpoint of headcount and the individual people, make sure the individual good ones are getting paid more than they think they could get paid anywhere else, and the bad ones, you've got them all off the payroll. Usually you've got a pretty good sense of that. My comment to Jonathan earlier, which is why I talk about the utilities, is it seemed like going through his P&L, just everywhere you look, there's money going out that by the time you all add it all up, there's probably an extra $100,000 being paid out, or $150,000. That should be in his pocket. So, you do have to make sure that things, don't get out of whack. But, I see a lot of stuff like all of a sudden you're paying $1,000 to have a janitorial service come in rather than having the two part-timers and one full-timer vacuum at the end of the night. Every one of those decisions makes sense in a vacuum. But if you're not careful at the end of the year, you made $120,000 less than you could have made. By trying to make the staff's life a little easier or being a little bit more extravagant on parties or something like that. And if it's a student service issue, something they're going to appreciate, be extravagant. But some of the other stuff, you can really start chewing up a lot of money if you're not careful, right? And the bigger the operation gets, by the way, on a percentage basis, if you're running a $2 million a year operation, I've gone through and found 15% in my financials before. Well, that meant I just pissed away $300,000 that year, right? So
we're talking about real money.
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely.
It's like the budget, $10 billion here, $10 billion there. Before you know it, you're talking about real money.
Well, there's an well, at every level. There was an article, Wall Street Journal this week, I think, Oracle just cut $1 billion out of their annual budget. and they're still doing all the same stuff. They just cut $1 billion out of their wow. expense structure, right? And you know, it's one of the things. You know, I mean, there really were a few secrets to Apple's turnaround. One of them was when Jobs took over the company, they were doing all their own manufacturing in house. They don't do any manufacturing at this point. It's all farmed out. But you know, there was just a ridiculous amount of expenses that they had in place that doesn't exist anymore. So anyway, so moving on, let's talk about stats. From a stats standpoint, I've had a couple of conversations with, you know, when you're doing a single school owner operator, it's easy to get complacent and not pay attention to the numbers as closely as you should. And especially if there's enough money in the bank at the end of the month, you don't really pay attention. The other end of the spectrum, I'll pick on you again, Jonathan, is you can get so many numbers and so many things you're paying attention to that you're not running the business, right? And the since there's a bunch of NTs in here, you know, an INTJ will get stuck in the abstract and not be out in the practical, right? And so it's easy to get yourself stuck into sitting back and looking at everything and staring at a computer screen and, you know, and working on a notepad but not out doing sales. And so, you know, the highest value thing anybody in the room has to do right now when you're in a single school is to sell the renewal. And so if you have 100 people to talk to and it's going to take you talking to them 500, you know, five times each, and that's 500 conversations, well, the average result of those conversations is probably $2,000-$3,000 an hour, right? Maybe $4,000 or $5,000 an hour. So, you know, it's the highest value thing, but it's the thing that gets put on the back burner the easiest, right? But let's look at this stat sheet, and I would not claim it's perfect. In fact, the evolution of this stat sheet was John Graydon stealing EFC stat sheet. But if you look at this one, total inquiries, appointment set, percentage to appointment, number of first intros, number of second intros, number of enrollments. If you're really good at tracking your marketing, for some periods of time at least, you'll subset that. So you'll know how many live events we did, fairs, carnivals, school programs, how many leads we generated, what the ratio of appointments to leads were, as one example. If you were doing a multi-pronged marketing approach, you should have a little, you know, at least a little clipboard with a checklist of not only how many calls, but how many calls said, doesn't mean it's true, but how many calls said they found out about you by watching the TV commercial, how many said they, you know, saw you in the newspaper, how many said they got a piece of mail. And keep in mind, just because it's what they said right now, it may just be what's in their hands. So I say I got a letter from you. Well, maybe they're in your follow-up sequence and they called originally from a TV show and then they came in to do something else. Then they saw you at a fair and finally you mailed them a letter the third time and they responded. So don't always attribute it to just that one thing. Again, like we talked about with TV, a halo effect. But don't get overwhelmed in numbers either. So if you try to, on the marketing results, if you try to nail it down too tightly to one specific thing, sometimes you miss the halo effect of the multiplicity of things that are happening. So you want to balance it out. And on a return on investment, there are some things that you know don't have much of a halo effect, right? So take Valpak Money Mail. If I do a Valpak or Money Mailer ad and I know of a certain number of calls that said they were had the coupon in front of them, if I'm not going to attribute a better response to anything else because of a marriage mail insert, right? But, again, TV, a radio show, like you were doing the newspaper in there, Bermuda, that stuff has a ripple effect. So I always give broader broadcast a little bit more leeway in my thinking. Then I do something like a marriage mail, something like that. Then,
just use two. I mean, yeah. This is definitely overanalyzation for a single school, maybe environment like that. But like for Mike and people in that scenario, telecapture.com for $6 a month, you can get a separate phone number and it tracks every inbound call from that phone number.
Yeah.
So you know, to answer questions, you know exactly how many people dialed that number. You know what I mean? And you have telecapture.com. It's just there's a million services out there, but I mean, again, if you want to get that granular, which probably Mike and maybe Eric and maybe Robert in the fitness environment, you know, and those type of things, maybe you do want to get that granular. But I mean, it's just such a cheap, easy piece of technology. You just have a little dashboard, and it'll tell you exactly how many people dialed that number that month. Now you know.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not saying it tells you everything. It just tells you how many people dialed that number every month.
Right.
You know
what I'm saying? Right.
So.
Well, and it's something you could take major chunks, right? So you could do anything you do in direct mail and put a phone number. You could do everything you do on TV and put a number. You wouldn't end up, if you had 50 numbers, you're not going to tell the difference anything. It's like even, well, you know.
If I'm going to do a television commercial and I'm going to do a fitness kickboxing or something like that, I want to know how many people dial the damn phone. Yeah. If I'm paying, you know.
Yeah.
$2,000 a month, $4,000 a month, or whatever.
Here's the caveat is we're usually dealing with too small of numbers to actually do any real testing, right? So you have to pay attention, keep track of the numbers, but then to actually test one thing against the other, we're not doing big enough. Years ago, I mean, some of you remember the old Extraordinary Marketing ads that I used to have in MA Pro and MA Success magazines. I had different 800 numbers than the two of them. And never got enough response. I was selling a ton of the stuff, but I never got enough difference in the two to have any sense of what was pulling better or not pulling better. It was essentially the same. So, but anyway, so going through the numbers here is there are some things that I can tell you without you even having to pay that close attention to the numbers. Is the broader broadcast media you do and the shorter form advertising, the flakier your ratios will be through the pipeline, right? So we addressed this once before, but with TV, I can run a bunch of people through the pipeline, but they're on average going to be flakier than if I had a short target list and mailed to them 12, 15 times, right? And you can go through the list of activities that you're going to do. And there will be some things where the person who picked, and part of the reason I think for direct mail is, you know, they put it on the refrigerator with a magnet and look at it 12 times before they pick up the phone, where if I'm driving in the car and I heard you on the radio and the first 10 callers get, you know, it's a knee-jerk reaction, but I'm not particularly serious about it, right? So the closer you come to long form, the more solid the lead is. In other words, an infomercial is better than a 30-second spot. And the closer you come to something that's physically in their hand, that they've had for a while as opposed to broadcast them, the tighter the ratio will be. And in general, without getting too bogged down there, you should be paying attention to lead source all the way up to upgrade. So, you know, I've seen offers that we've run in media that we've done where a whole bunch of people came in and a whole bunch of people dropped out pretty quick. Where in other sources they came in and they were there still there 10 years from now. And again, balancing with, you know, don't try to keep track of everything and get bogged down in just watching numbers. But you want to kind of separate that out in your mind. Does that make sense? So going through the next number, it's almost a universal problem in the room. And add peak performers and it's double the problem. Very, very few are doing the right kind of ratios to the upgrade quickly enough. Okay, and so if your ratios aren't very tight and aren't very quick, you're in the majority. Okay, the scenario that I used with a lot of you recently is the recent one, Sterling, Virginia, which is Jeff Smith's son and Allie, if you met her at Keystone, there. Doing of new enrollments, number is 87% are upgrading, and of those, over 90% are going into the more expensive program, and less than 10% into the cheaper program. Okay, and the timeline for that is within the first 2 months, most of them within the first month. Okay, so their last year was 197. 397, 247, I believe is the price they were quoting. So this was leadership. almost all of them within 2 months, right? So, you know, I can tell you from, you know, various people in the room I've talked to, most of you don't go high enough on the upgrade. In fact, Sean is better than this is because you're now 497 for your upgrade.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, yeah. So I think everybody in here should have a program that's $497 a month. One of the things that I've been preaching for a long time, rarely get somebody to do. Loiter is the only one that I know of who just launched, and as usual, that's Lloyd's great strength, is he just does it. But Lloyd launched, at my request, a $1,297 and a $1,597 a month upgrade from his MMA program. And immediately, if I remember the numbers correctly, did like 10% of his student body into the deal. So he ended up with like 40 people paying over $1,000 a month overnight. Now think of those numbers. So he's running, you know, like this couple years, so don't hold me to the exact numbers, but it was something like he had 400 mostly adult men in his Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu MMA program, and about 10% of them upgraded into the new higher level. And now, by the way, he's got the next higher level, which is the guys that he's actually training and has a percentage of their purse and all that stuff, right? But if you have, now you can't do this when you have 60 students. There's just not enough critical mass. But if you have 300 students, you have 20% that want to do whatever you offer them, and probably have half that can afford it, right? So if you have 300 active students and you offer 300 active students a $1,000 a month program, and you had half of them that would do it, would it be worth having 15 people at $1,000 a month into the new higher thing? Absolutely. The other thing we were just talking about was the business mastermind program, which is, Sean, you've been talking about that. But again, once you have critical mass, there's a huge difference. You have a school of 100 students maximizing everything, that's great. You get 300-400 people or 1,000 or 2,000, and all of a sudden you've got small percentages, but enough people to make a lot of things make sense, right? So suddenly you can do 20 people in the room, and you're doing a business mastermind meeting once a month, and you got an extra $15,000 a month net profit just from that. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you can do at the higher level, right? But I would say one of the things that's pretty much universal is the revenue per student is not where it should be. So, you know, I think it's very reasonable to be at 250 to 300 average revenue per student in any school in the room. Certainly foundational should be a couple hundred a month per student. Robert, you're at a couple hundred a month per student. Eric's at a couple hundred dollars per month student, a little above, right? Is anybody else close to that? Joe is, Mike is, Jonathan is. So I think your number was about 220. Is that right?
Me?
Yeah.
The number on the sheets is not only because I included my 3 to 5 program, but yeah, our, without the 3 to 5 program, we're about 220, 223.
About 220.
A question we had at lunch, we were just talking. When you have a family plan like you have, mm-hmm. so two paying, two not paying.
Right.
You should include the two who are not paying, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I count every head. But does everybody know what he's talking about as far as the family plan?
Yeah, I have a question about that, though.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've talked about Mile High Karate instructors, and they say they have like 60% of them in programs, and then their student numbers are, you know, higher than makes sense, right? So,
say it again. Now.
Well, if 60% of your members have 2-3 people in the program,
no, not even close.
Okay,
so not even close.
What do you? Because I heard mentioned this.
Yeah.
If I'm right, you said that if 2 people enroll for a full price, then the rest.
Free.
Right.
And are you saying pay in full or monthly?
Either. But let's talk about that in the scheme of things. No, nowhere near.
Okay.
60% have 2 family members extra free. It might be 60% that there's more than one person, right? And okay. If there's 2 people, it's 2 full price paying people, right? And then if there were 3 people, there's one that's essentially free, right? That's a tag on, and an awful lot of the emphasis is on enroll the child, sibling if there is a sibling, and mom, right? And so, but let's discuss that. Here's what I've done with our schools over the years. You know, for a long time it was 10% off the second person,
20% off for the third. For a while, we did 25%, 50%, 50%, and this kept going, right? And so I've done all kinds of different iterations, and Bill Clark, several years ago now, convinced me, and took him a long time to do it. And just like you, I mean, there's a bunch of us freaking INTJ idiots in here, right? But I got the spreadsheet out and spreadsheeted it all, and how many do we have of this? And, you know, it took him 3 years to get me to do it, probably. Not that he was like, you know, he wasn't lobbying me to do it, but he kept mentioning it. But the thing is here's what happens, is if you look at your student body, how many you have a single, how many of them you have two students, and then how many you have three, four, five in the family, right? Mm-hmm. And when you start thinking about it, you go, oh my God, I got a family of five, and they're right now, they're paying X amount, and if I did that, well, two things I found is, one, multiple school issue, which is the way I looked at it to begin with. It was Bill Clark's way of looking at it. Hell of a lot easier to have it, it's $200 a month or it's $400 a month to do the sale, than to have your program director in there with a calculator trying to figure it out, or pulling out the family plan deal and trying to divide it by the number of people and all that stuff, right? So one thing was, as a replicability, which isn't necessarily appropriate for all of you guys, because if you're doing all the sales yourself and you're pretty good at it, then it doesn't apply to you. But from a standpoint of replicability, it's just easier, okay? Number two is, if we've got two or three kids, it gets us a lot easier time getting mom on the floor and getting mom in the class. And then our retention rate of the family goes up, okay? And I don't mean mom in the sexist way. 80% of the adults that we get are mom, not dad. Maybe not be that high, but it's pretty close. Probably 75% of the moms bringing the kid anyway, so it's you're going to be here twice a week anyway, Mrs. Jones. Why don't you get out there and do it with him, right? And the only time that doesn't make sense to them is that they've got a two-year-old with them, right? And for a while, we toyed with having a little babysitting service so that we could watch the two-year-old, but that never seemed to make much sense at the end of the day. What I have found is, one, the sale is easier. So the family sales are easier, and it facilitates it. Number two is, we get an awful lot more parents on the floor. And number three is, if we've got the parent on the floor, the retention is a lot better and the renewal rate's a lot better. Okay? Yes, sir.
How do you handle renewal on a free student?
Well, you're renewing the family, essentially. Right?
Oh,
So essentially, you know, and most of these aren't, I've got the two kids and now 8 months later I add them on. Most of it's just right at the enrollment, right? So the cycle is all the same. And in practical terms, you know, if you got two kids and they're both in leadership and mom adds on 6 months later, I mean, our version of it is they have a blue top and they're in the leadership program. You just roll them straight into that.
Could you say
that
again? That's what you said.
Well, I said on the franchise side, in practical terms, they're wearing the blue top. That means they're in leadership, and mom enrolls 9 months later. We just give her a blue top from the beginning, and she's in leadership from day one. But it doesn't happen very often. Usually what's happening is we're adding mom or dad on within the first week or two, if not at the first lesson or two. So they're starting together. And then if they start together, it's so much easier to do the renewal, right? But compared to, you know, either one of these systems, see, I found when I went through the numbers, and I was looking at, I don't know, probably 1,800 students at the time, is the vast majority of families we had two people, right? So now my revenue just bumped up a little bit compared to any of those, right? So my revenue bumped up compared to this or this for everybody that we had two people, okay? And then the question was, without doing it this way, how many did we have that were three or four? It was a fairly small percentage. Okay. And so now, the net impact financially of just purely looking at it from a logical standpoint, the tuition was neutral. But now the impact is the positive, which is harder to track, but the positive of mom and her son and her daughter all taking class together, I believe, is much stronger, right? So we end up with a stronger family because now one of the parents are in class with them, or both of the parents.
You said 200 or 300. 200 is a lot. And 300 is a lot. I thought you said make easy prices. Maybe I misunderstood.
Oh, no. What I said, I guess, two things. One is, when I look through our entire student body, the number of families we had that were three or four people was pretty small. And so, therefore, this change in pricing was really essentially a neutral impact on the total revenue based upon what it looked like to begin with.
I know, but before, way before, you were talking about easier pricing, and I thought
doing it with, you have the price for one person, you have a price for a family, is a much easier sales presentation.
So what's the
price? He said 200 or 400.
Yeah, right.
So 200 is for one person. Anybody else? Two people or more is $400.
Right. Well. Last year we were doing $197, $398. Right. So, $197 a month for one person, $398 for two people. Or $397.
You said that's Jeff Smith's school doing the top there.
Right.
How many is he enrolling per month on average?
Low 20s.
So I try to figure this out. Let's say you're enrolling 20 a month.
Yeah.
And so if you're 90%, roughly, that means 18 people per month are upgrading.
Right.
So at the end of 12 months, that's another 190 students.
Right.
So after 2 or 3 years, every school should be up to 600 or 700 students. Is he doing that?
Well, that's the quit rate, you know.
Well, yeah. But I'm saying if you're upgrading them, even if you have a mediocre upgrade, you should be keeping them for at least a year and a half.
It's trending that way, yeah. That school, I would say they really got all the systems in place to do the renewal process smoothly about 12 months ago. Okay. So that's where they were first starting in these numbers.
So there's not a track record of that accumulated progress?
Not yet. It's also a school that before we implemented all the new pricing had 300 and so active people at an average of probably 125 a month. So they have a huge legacy group at a much lower level, well, kind of like Robert does.
That's my big problem.
Yeah.
And part two, briefly over the phone when we were doing the coaching call, you had mentioned that, and you said he had integrated a class-by-class promotional scripted class, if you will.
Right.
Is that something we could address?
Absolutely. I think we should, because everybody needs it.
Yep.
Absolutely. And see, part of why I've been paying attention to these numbers is I've been preaching this for 20 years, and it's the first time I actually got any of my own schools to freaking do it. Truth be, you know how that goes, right?
Sure.
But in general terms, the way I've been describing it forever is make it where it's really 8 intros into leadership, right? And just think about it as they're going to do intro, enroll, intro, renew. And that's what the first month looks like. And I didn't come up with this, by the way. Jay Kim's Karate back in the 80s, who was like the lowest service organization I've ever seen. Part of the reason they did it was because it was where Tommy Lee came from, right? But Kim's in the 80s had expanded pretty dramatically, brought in a bunch of guys from Bally's, formerly Holiday Health and Tennis, and implemented health club sales processes. But their deal was this. Is you could enroll the black belt, or their fallback was 18 months. And if you enrolled for 18 months, you did private lessons with the program director for the first month, that then got you into black belt, but before the first month, before he put you into the regular class. And part of the reason they did that, the regular class sucked so bad, that they wanted to make sure they had you renewed to black belt and paid in full before they put you in the regular class. And that's not universal, but who is familiar with Kim's? Wait, is that a fair assessment? Yeah. All about a sales system. But see, if you have good service and a good sales system, then it's not a bad deal, right? The other one who's done this forever is Hafner's always done what he called his Quick Start program, which is for the first month, basically, they do it like it's a series of intros, pre-scheduled at the same time as or just before the regular beginner class, where somebody works with them individually or in small groups to get them oriented. On the process into the renewal. So, Carol?
If it's $197 and $397 for your basic program, then what is it in probably 8 lessons or 1 month later you're going to look to upgrade them and where those prices be?
Oh, well, this is what they were doing, what we were doing last year. It was $197, $397, $247. And our case, we call it Leadership Master Club. You know, overall, you know, the structure of what we're telling everybody for NAPN is have a Black Belt Club and leadership program. Because the only reason it's that is we had a Black Belt Club and then invented Master Club, so put Master Club above it, and then killed Black Belt Club, and then created leadership and put that above it, right? And I think we stole the idea of leadership from Clark, but their approach, by the way, is different. It was like 149, 169. I've seen several people who have done like mass training. They're doing like $10 a month bump or $20 a month bump. It's not very aggressive, right? My rule of thumb, by the way, is double and a 50% bump. So if this is 150% of where you were at, and this is double, that seems like over and over and over is simple to duplicate. You know, my guess is we can go above that double number. And in fact, what we're doing, our price sheet for this year is $249,497. So that's what I'm working on getting all the guys to do now. What's that?
I said we could probably get everybody has to shit about that.
Yeah, exactly. Did that make sense, Carol?
Yes, and then if you have two or more people, what is that?
It's double.
Yeah, so just double. And with this, we've been doing 397 down, or double. And with this, 997 down. And with this, I think 749 or
down?
Yeah.
Four one. Yeah, so
nice. The big before the kids.
Yeah. I don't know. Let's say that. But so they're doing like 997 down, 397 a month for leadership, 500 down or 750 down, I forget, for master club. And then a cash price.
And what's the down payment for writers?
For what?
For not for leadership, but for thrill mentoring.
The conversation,
okay.
Which is, we did it at a sales boot camp. It's on the recording, but we say now it's 400 to register, and 197 a month. Since you're coming in now from blank, if you want to go ahead and register now, it's a $200 discount. So it's just 200 to register now, plus the first month. So they do 200 plus 197 to enroll. And of course, the logic of the $200 discount is to have price leverage to get them to do it now, rather than wait for the end of 2 weeks or whatever it might be. Is this all making sense?
How long is the term for the monthly payments? If two people join the leadership and then their family joins after them, how long are they paying?
Okay.
60 months. Maryland.
Well, that's another topic.
That's all you have to say. Maryland.
Are you bonded?
Yes.
Okay. Then you don't have to worry about it. Once you're bonded, in New York and Maryland, once you're bonded, there's not a lot of
on New York, you can write up to 36 months anyways without
right.
being bonded.
Right.
So.
Yeah, here's two answers to that question. On the new enrollment, it's 12 months. On what Jeff's been doing on those numbers that we were talking about before is leadership is the second degree, master club is the first degree. Okay?
I dislike that a lot.
Well, it doesn't matter because they're doing 90% for leadership.
Yeah. You never present anything.
I can argue in both cases. But the design of the thing was leadership is a second degree, master club is first degree. I mean, it's second degree. They're both second degree. Now, my recommendation is, until you're hitting those kind of ratios, just make them both first degree black belts.
Okay.
Make them to first degree black belt. Or in your Krav case, 3-4 years.
Make them some
Yeah. What's that?
What do you mean? Just give it to them or what?
No. Create the term. Yeah, when we're doing the renewal right now, we're actually renewing them to second degree black belt. And the conversation, which is again is on those recordings, is Joey's 7 now, that means he'll be a black belt by the time he's 10 or 11, he'll be a second degree by the time he's 13. And then we renew him into the leadership program. And there's two ways to do that. There's a leadership program, there's a master club, they get this. I won't go through it all right now, but we've got a structure where it's renewing them to second degree black belt. And I did that years ago for the only reason really was I was trying to solve the problem of people dropping out of first degree black belt. Right? So really it was just enrolling them to second degree to eliminate that. Then what I found is felt just as easy to enroll them if they're gonna commit to black belt anyway, it's easy enough dialogue. Well, obviously, Mr. Jones, no kid's going to train for 4 years, get to his black belt, then drop out. So we have just enroll him straight to second degree. Now, when I say that's not a recommendation, there's two things. One is there are legalities in different places, California, New York, and so forth, that in Maryland, if it goes beyond 3 years, you've got to do a little song and dance. So you can do a 6-year payment plan, but have it be 36 months and have it auto renew. I mean, there's different ways to get around that, right? Make it legal, but the main thing is the psychology you're setting them up to think about. For years, what we did is we enrolled them to first degree black belt, and then halfway through, renewed them to second degree black belt. You certainly don't want to let them get anywhere close to black belt before they renew to second degree, because the closer they get, the more they start thinking like it's high school graduation, and what am I going to do next?
We used to run the whole model like that. Either 9 years ago or whatever, the whole model was they were in the program whatever until they got to like red belt.
Yeah.
And then, of course, what happens is you get all of them that are going to be black belts into the master club, but you get any of them that weren't. You know what I mean? So,
right.
You know the guys that are already,
yeah.
You missed all the ones you could
get. Half moon theory.
Yeah. This was more like 7-8. By that point, they're...
Yeah. Does everybody know what he means by half moon theory? The old EFC thing was, Nick called it half moon. So I'm enrolled for 12 months. I want to get the renewal there. 6 months. But that doesn't work very well. In reality, what we're saying is the enrollment is just prep time for the renewal. And just... right here, get them renewed to the next level. The thing is, you want to get them renewed when they're excited about it. And the second thing, Jonathan, it was your numbers we looked at in part last time, is once they're renewed, they don't drop out, right? Mm-hmm. And if I remember correctly, once you had them in the high-level program, like 0.1%, were dropping out. And if they weren't in the higher program, maybe 5% were dropping out per month. So all of a sudden, and I've said it this way for years, if you want to fix your retention, first fix your renewals, because once they're committed to black belt, they're not going to drop out, right? So here's
my question about
yes.
that. So the schools that have bigger 90% conversion,
mm-hmm.
how come they don't have a dropout rate that's 1% or less?
Ask that again.
The schools that have 80 or 90% renewal rates, how come their dropout rates are not 1% or less?
Well, if I could just say...
Yeah,
it's the same question you're
trying to ask. Never mind 1%. Let's say they're doing well, but not super. Let's say 4% dropout. Why don't all these schools have 1,200 students? Because they're really getting a much bigger dropout than they're reporting.
Well, Eric,
Go ahead.
As somebody, we average about 4%. We didn't set out with a goal to build a school 400-plus all the time or whatever.
Sure.
But that's where we end up. And, we have 620, 540, 380, 380, and 205, something like that. The 200-person school, is 2%, or whatever, 3%, 6-8. I told them, if I see a double-digit, dropout number in your school, you're in big trouble. But for us, once you get up to 400 students, it drafts up to 4%, you get to 16, then that's what it is. So it is absolutely true that 400... we enroll about 16, 18 a month, and we lose 16 or 18 a month. Some months we get it tight down to 14, some other months it goes up to 22. So in my experience, to run, you know, to get over 400, you know, at a competitive level of school is awfully, awfully hard.
Mike, you missed part of the. His
answer is actually the right answer because you guys are both asking the same question. You're right. Statistically, the statistical variance is going to be a lot higher at a bigger number of students, right? So you may be running 10, 11, 12% dropout, you know, when you get to 450 students.
No,
so
well,
I'm sorry. Enrollments is the next part. Yeah.
I did come in the middle, so I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm doing the same as you per school.
Right, right.
300-400 students, 4% dropout.
Right.
If somebody else is doing what I'm doing, and I'm getting 40% upgrades, and somebody else is saying they're getting 90% upgrades, that growth curve, it should be like within a year or two, you're up to 600, 800, 1,000 plus
students. Yeah, dramatic.
And keep growing. And that's not what most schools are doing. So something's askew with the numbers.
Well, their upgrade and their attrition rate are two different things, though, aren't they?
They are.
But the
premise was that we did 1%, less than 1% dropout. With leadership people.
Your upgrade is not for 1 year. Your upgrade is for 3 or 4 years.
Sure, sure.
So you have to go on the assumption that even if they sign up for 4 years, they're going to come 2 more years. But even that number doesn't work. It doesn't play out correctly. It's much higher.
Yeah, I think the attrition rate's the same regardless of what membership they're on.
That's true.
Wise.
I disagree.
You think the higher ones stay a little longer, right?
A little longer.
I think a lot longer in most cases. But there's two sides of it. One is if you're looking at 300 people and the dropout rate is 4%. In most cases, I think if you look at a certain select group, it's triple, quadruple that. And so the first thing is a huge amount of that dropout is front loaded into the front end.
Yep.
Right. So the what's very unusual is that 87% number. Right, I mean that's as high as I've ever seen. Okay, so in most cases, if you're doing upgrades to 40%, you know that the other 60% are all dropping out.
Correct.
Right, and so if you look at your 4% number, that 4% is an aggregate across some group that's dropping out at 1%, and another group that's dropping out at 10%, and it's aggregating across. And we spent a lot of time years ago. Dave and Tim and I going through this, and we looked at every belt level, graduation rates to belt level, all of that stuff. And we found another thing that happened is different in different schools based on different curriculum and so forth, but different plateaus, right? Where, you know, in tracking the numbers for quite a few years, I don't have, you know, recent numbers on this, we were finding places where there was a spike in the dropout rate. And we're going in to tweak and tune the curriculum at those points to try to make it different and interesting. So what you will find is, you know, you might have month 6 to 12, hardly anybody drops out, and month 15 to 18, you have a bunch. And if it's not July or December, maybe there's a curriculum issue there. So if you look at that. But I do firmly believe that once you have them renewed, and again, having looked at a lot of numbers, that the dropout rate drops by at least 75%. Okay, I think his numbers were unusually low, in part because his ratio to upgrades hasn't been very high over that period of time. So the ones that he had were unusually committed and so forth already, right? So I think his numbers were skewed. But still, I mean, think about if everybody who's upgraded, the dropout rate was 2% a month. And everybody who's not, it's 6% a month. I mean, that's still...
More like
12%. Yeah, even 12%. That's right.
So,
right.
I mean, so 10%
would
be 10 months.
Right.
But still, Eric's point is still correct. If 2% is dropping out and you're signing up 20 students a month and you're upgrading 87% of them,
well,
I mean, the thing is going to...
Well, okay, if you have 300 active... And you're dropping out, you said 2% a month. So your replacement is 6 people, right? And I mean, Durkin's numbers are like what you're talking about. He's 380, doing 6 new ones a month, right? Maintained about 380 at about 200 apiece. So let's say 70,000 a month with that many new enrollments, right? And
I mean, truthfully, that's about the best I've ever seen. You know, I've seen a few people get, you know, between 1% and 2% a month drop out. But
did you say 50 new ones a month?
What's that?
No.
Six.
Six.
He's getting six new enrollments a month on average. 300. Did we run that interview with him yet? No,
I want to hear that.
Yeah, it's really good. You'll really enjoy it when it gets in the. I did a bunch of new interviews recently with people we hadn't. Pat Worley, John Worley. John's really good. Keith Hafner.
Last year.
Oh yeah, that one's already run. And
that was a great one. By the way. I really enjoyed that.
It was really good. Yeah. He's on my list to do a follow-up.
You did Greg Tierney?
Yeah.
Do you know what Buzz Durkin charges for family members, or does he not have a family discount?
I don't. I know for the first person, it's about $200 a month.
Okay.
And I don't know what he's doing on families. I would guess 10%, 20%.
Right, minor. So a private school type of tuition discount. Yeah.
That would be my guess.
I think he said in the interview he had a black belt class coming up that Friday that was like 60 or 65 people, all fourth degree and above.
Jeez.
Yeah.
How cool was that?
Oh, yeah.
One school. Right?
Do you have all the step-by-step, the eight lessons or the 10 or 12, whatever lessons that he does to accomplish that 87%?
The Sterling School? Yeah.
You have that?
Well, that was a lot of that last call, wasn't it?
Can you give that to us?
Let's walk through it.
Okay. Eric's question is still this kind of on the table. There is a statistical problem.
I'm working on it.
He's working on it. We've got good people on it.
we got a bunch of INTJs in here. I don't even turn my laptop on because I know I'll be fritzing around with the spreadsheet to try to answer
but
the question.
That's exactly what I was initially asking you, is what are the key sales buzz terms
during
those eight lessons?
Let's finish up on the stats, and that's the next thing we're going to talk about. So let's keep going on the stat sheets, because that's how we got here. But see, metaphorically, again, not trying to be too abstract, since most of you are abstract ones, we can do this. It's kind of liberating to know that we've got at least half the room that, you know, doesn't get annoyed with the. But what most people do is they enroll a new student, throw them over the wall into the class, and then go try to reel them back in a few months and try to renew them, right? And see, by that time, it's almost worse than starting from scratch, because they're not thinking that way, and you're putting everything into their mind completely new and fresh now, while they're already thinking a different way.
It's a lot worse than starting from scratch.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you've already kind of predefined your expectations.
Yeah, the wrong way.
Yeah.
And really what you want to do is you want all the language to be during the enrollment process about training to black belt and beyond. And then you want the enrollment to be taking that away, starting them with a trial to see if they qualify, right? And you really want to think about it that way. And frankly, if you're looking at the stats, it should be like a eight lesson intro process. And what they're doing at Sterling actually is they're doing lesson one, lesson two, enroll, and then four classes beyond that to prep the renewal right now. I keep using 8, 12, but really, in most cases, 4.
Yeah, I think it's 4, then progress check, then they determine what path
they're going. Yeah, basically, it's one extra class a month, and we're doing it by the end of the month. But is this all making sense? And so many times, the number that nobody keeps track of is how many renewal conferences they did, how many of them ended up renewing, right? And again, tracking that ratio. Now,
and on that sheet, by the way, Mr. Holland, I'm sure everybody knows, but that sheet is less granular than some of those probably more new, maybe more general.
Yeah.
But it doesn't also track call to intro set,
mm-hmm.
and then intro show, and then intro to set, intro to show, right? So
right.
It does it in macro.
Yeah.
Mostly just because everybody's starting at zero, and this is like a 5,000% improvement.
Yeah.
So if you're already tracking those numbers,
no.
And replace it with this.
Don't slim it down.
Yeah.
Don't slim it down. Don't get fixated on it too much. Something else to take a look at getting really detailed into the numbers.
And Jonathan, I'm picking on you just because I see you're good at sending me all your numbers and we're good at talking about them. So it's a compliment. But
trust me.
Well, no. Seriously, is sometimes you're better off to do a thorough quarterly review than to be looking at every number every week. Okay, and so I would be at the end of each quarter going through all the numbers, spending a couple of hours, you know, blank legal pad, trying to figure out what they told me that I needed to look at. Because sometimes when you're looking at every number every week, is there's too much stuff and you get bogged down, you can't see the forest for the trees. And you should look at your P&L every month. You're not really paying attention to it very much during the month because it's, you know, pretty much what is what it's going to be, right? I would, one of the things, I remember one of Nicolkinas' deals with the EFC is they were pretty damn big. I don't know how many clients they had. This pre-wire. He signed every check. If you watch Trump, he signs every check. Now, Trump's got a big damn organization. He signs every check. Part of the deal was to pay attention to every little expense. You know, when I started abstaining myself from running the schools and still, you know, owned a couple, I gave the guys debit cards so I wouldn't have to sign every check. Now, guess what happened to the expenses? There was $1,000 in crappy, stupid stuff in there. One of the guys bought himself a new cell phone, and I mean, you know, there was stuff like they were stealing money, but there was also stuff like they're going to have a party and they spent, you know, $400 where I would have spent $150 just because it wasn't their money. So you do have to really pay attention to all that stuff. And based upon what your hourly rate is, some of it's too small for you to pay attention to it, but you got to have somebody paying attention, right? But going on through the rest of the numbers here, this sheet doesn't have, let's see, not paying attention to this. Toby, this doesn't have a new monthly payment number. If you had Jeff and I sitting in the room, there's two numbers that we both want to see every week. And when I say we, he likes one of them, I like the other. He wants to see total contract amount. And I like to see new monthly payments. And when it comes to non-paying actives, inactives, not paying all that stuff, I don't spend any time worrying about what students are prepaid, paid in full, paid monthly. I don't spend any time at all worrying about that, right? So I'll hear some people on the phone say to me, well, I have 200 active students, but only 120 are paying right now. Well, if that means they're supposed to be paying monthly and they defaulted and you're turning a blind eye, that's a problem. But if it means they've already paid for a year or two or whatever, you know, you should have new ones coming in that are prepaying. I'm never worried about who's who. Nor when it comes to retention or anything, do I pay any attention? I've heard some people say, well, I prepaid black belt, why am I going to call them? They're still, you know, from a financial standpoint, they're good for positive PR, they're good for having a new black belt, they're good for becoming staff, they're good for a referral, and they're good for fulfilling the promise you made to them, right? So I spend just as much time trying to get somebody who's paid me in full for life, of five to leadership as I would be if they're paying monthly and they're in my renewal prep cycle, right? But new monthly payment means if they're paying $200 a month and I just enrolled 20 of them, that I know the new monthly payment is $4,000 that we added this month, okay? And I'll do that as with renewals, net new monthly payment. In other words, they were paying $200 and now they're going to pay $350, so the only thing we record is the $150, right? But my rule of thumb is if it's 12-month or more contracts, and this will give another one for Eric to figure out if the numbers really work or not, but I always just multiply my head times 10 because that's where that's heading. Right, so if I did $4,000 in new monthly billing that I added this month, I'll run in my head times 10, and that's what I think the billing check should be headed towards. Does that make sense to everybody? No? most of them are on 12-month contracts. Some of them are in higher renewals, but also a lot of them we're going to renew and they're going to pay in full. So we're going to do some renewals that are going to pay in full. We're going to do some people that drop out and never pay, and we're going to do some renewals that the payment bumps. But my sense is, from whatever we're billing here, new. So this is 4,000. It starts next month. Whatever that average is each month, if I multiply by 10, that's where my billing check should end up, right? So I've for years run it with, that's the way I'm thinking about where the gross is heading is the new monthly payment times 10. Jeff Smith goes at it from another angle, which is whatever your contract amount is, discounted by 10 or 20% for some fall off, that's where your gross should be at. What I don't like about that is when we start doing these long-ass contracts, right, is if I did a six-year contract and I'm only losing them at 2% a year, statistically, I'm never going to collect 6 years worth, right? I mean, if I'm dropping out 4% a year, statistically, by the end of 2 years, everybody's gone and half of them are gone by the end of the year. If I'm losing 2% a month, that's 4 years. So, you know, just purely in numbers-wise, doesn't matter how long the contract is, I'm going to, on average, collect a certain number no matter what happens. Does that make sense? So as you start going over your contracts, I don't consider the rest of it to be relevant because it's a commitment that I'm likely not going to see in many cases. Does that make sense?
I had a question on your sheet that you gave to us. For example, I had 2011, roughly 150 enrollments.
Right.
Roughly 120 renewals and upgrades.
Okay.
But that does not mean that I had 80% of new students upgrading.
Right.
More than half of those were long-term students.
Renewing again.
Yeah.
Right.
So I want to make sure how you're addressing that.
No, that's fine. It is a good question for an apples-to-apples comparison, right? So if you, let's say, I mean, one of the guys that's new into the group, Chris, I think, is doing... A lot of them are six-month enrollments with six-month renewals. And even with that structure, he's doing $60,000, $70,000 a month. But statistically, he could have for every active student two renewals a year, right? So you just need to know if apples to apples. Like with what we're doing with the franchises, they're going to like renew, and then they're not going to renew again until they're getting into the second-degree black belt to renew them to third-degree black belt. So our renewal number is almost always of that first 2 months. Right, but you want to be able to compare apples to apples with what you're doing, okay? And I would suggest, I mean, it really feels like what works best is they're renewed at least to black belt or the equivalent. Well, we have spent a lot of time on like the Krav thing because the Krav guys don't think that way, and the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu because they want it to be like a 9 freaking year black belt, right? So. And my argument to them, by the way, is they should have a 3 or 4 year black belt program, and then figure out how it all works from there. Because, you know, people just, you know, a college degree is 4 years, right? A master's degree is 2 years. A PhD is 3 years. I mean, that's the time links that people are used to thinking in terms of. But on stuff like that, you got to figure out what's the comparable, right? And, you know, I think it's kind of hard, like in the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu environment. You're going to be a purple belt. Well, I mean, all the karate and taekwondo guys have conditioned the public to think in terms of black belt school. And so they're fighting that headwind of what the general public knows already. So people already know what black belt is, but they don't know any of that other stuff. Does that make sense? But when you're looking at these numbers, is... Does anybody have a counterpoint to me on the breakdown of revenue? Have you looked at numbers where you've made enough money on T-shirts or events or something else to make it worthwhile?
No, sir.
We do a tremendous amount of pro shop, but I still agree with you.
Yeah, yeah. How much is a tremendous amount?
$3,000 to $4,000 a month.
Okay. In a single school environment, the best I ever saw on Pro Shop was Greg Silva when he was in Coral Springs, was doing about $10,000 a month on Pro Shop.
Then it's worthwhile.
We had like a
No, it wasn't. I went through all those numbers. I told him to get rid of it. Because he had $5,000 a month in hard cost, he had about $1,000 a month in slippage. Now, not just theft, but, you know, I bought 150 T-shirts and sold 125 of them and ate 25 of them, so therefore the profit margin. All that kind of stuff, too. So, really, he was doing gross profit of $4,000, chewing up 900 square feet for space with a part-time receptionist who was there 25 hours a week. So now you've got $1,000 in direct overhead for the person. You've got to replace that person twice a year. And that's a more bigger pain in the ass than you think it is, right? So you've got a person that turns over 200% a year, plus you've got to pay them $1,000 a month, plus you've got 900 square feet eaten up. By the time I went through it with them, I said, why the hell are you bothering with this thing? Because we're doing 10,000 a month. I said, no, you're getting about 1,500.
You know, 800 students or something.
Like, well, he said 1,000.
Yeah.
He said 1,000. But in truthful numbers, yeah, actively training, doing Kempo karate in the school, it might have been 500 or 600, right? He had a lot of the older teenage sibling would pay $10 a month to be a student so they come to the teen night once a month. I mean, he had a lot of that kind of stuff. The profitability in that school was always abysmal, by the way. It was just always horrible. I think the best I ever saw him do was 45 or 50,000 in a month with 12,000 a month in rent and huge payroll, and he was working on Thanksgiving Day doing renewals. I mean, it was just, you know, the numbers sounded good, but I mean, he and I were close friends back then. I was going through the P&L and walking through all the stuff, and it's like in Syracuse, I spent quite a bit of time one time with Steve when he had the three schools in Syracuse at peak, and we went through the numbers. I had five locations at the time, he had three, and his expenses were so out of whack. He had a full-time renewal program director, full-time enrollment program director, a couple full-time instructors, on average 7,000 square foot. And by the time you got it all said and done, his gross for three locations was the same as my gross for five. My net was 350 or something like that, and he had to put money in to keep things going. So, you know, the expense thing is a big deal. You know, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how well things are cranking if you get the expenses out of whack. But anyway, so going through these numbers, you know, if I was going to watch just four numbers, I'd be watching your enrollments, your renewals, your new monthly payment, and your dropout percentage. And then everything else flows in from those numbers, right? And then once you've got that, the question is always, am I getting enough people in the door or am I not closing enough of them, right? So you've got to take a look at what the percentage is from intro flow to enrollment. And a lot of times you have a marketing problem if you're getting a lot of people in but don't have a closing rate, not a sales problem, right? Because it's very possible to put 100 of very unqualified intros in the pipeline, or to put a bunch of people in the pipeline that you just get overwhelmed and then your ratios go to hell, right? So, you know, I've seen schools with 150 intros and five enrollments, and seen schools with, you know, 27 enrollments or 27 intros and 26 enrollments. So you've got to really pay attention to whether it's a marketing issue or it's a sales issue along the way. Is that making sense to everybody? The other thing on the behind-the-scenes Disney thing, and we'll get back to this, but notice how they pay attention to every little detail. And see, a lot of times your sales or retention issue is something that you, having been there all the time, would never think about, right? I remember one time, never would have dawned on me, but some mom came in and just told me she was not going to renew because there's never toilet paper in the bathroom. Well, you know, I mean, she had chutzpah almost, you know, how many are ever going to say something like that, right? So there, you never know what it is, but there's a ton of little details in the school that can be the problem. And it doesn't take too many details to add up, for there's enough of those little things that are a problem. And sometimes the sales ratio thing is purely a school or personnel first impression, right? I mean, I've seen the program director smokes and has bad breath. And, you know, and every mom who came in went, ooh, I can't be in the same room with this guy, and went somewhere else. So you've got to be aware of all those little details. A lot of times, if you're there every day, it's not obvious to you, right? And it's, again, what I think is kind of interesting about doing the little behind-the-scenes thing with Disney is there's a ton of things you would never notice by just showing up in the park and going there that are interesting details that they put a lot of time and thought into, right? And then when you go into the park next time, all of a sudden you notice every 12 foot there's a trash can and you know all of the other stuff that goes on with it. Is this making sense? So I imagine everybody in here is pretty good at keeping track of the numbers. And again, the only thing that happens with a bigger school operation is you've got to also get good at reading between the lines, right? You have this as, you know, I got really good at spotting when somebody was lying about the numbers too, right? Because all of a sudden their sales ratio is too good, or everybody who called made an appointment, or, you know, nobody was dropping out, but their billing was not going anywhere, you know, like... So you get, as you start managing from a distance, you've got to learn not to take any of the numbers by face value. Sure. You know, do they make sense in context?
There should always be some bad news.
Yeah.
Every time Graham Marshall goes to one of the schools and all the candidates look great,
Something's wrong.
He said, where's the bad ones?
Oh, yeah.
Because he knows because there's a connection. If everybody that tests today is awesome, we work hard, our team works hard. But if there's no poor performing candidates, underperforming candidates,
they weren't allowed to show up.
Weren't allowed to show up, and therefore they're going to be demoted. They must be on the demoted, and so our inactives are going to be higher.
Exactly.
So he says, where were the bad people?
Yeah.
Where's the bad people? There are no bad people today. So.
Well, that's exactly right. And you take that into every second.
Right. So, yeah, there's no, right. Somebody had higher signing ratios this year, and their monthly check wasn't going up at all. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the year, his sales percentage was highest, and his retention, his inactivation percentage was highest of the five schools. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, there's always some bad news.
Well, and that was your point earlier today, too. I think it deserves to be, you know, it deserves to kind of sink in, too. But, you know, when it goes to the retail argument, it goes to this argument, it goes to all those little pieces of the puzzle. Like, if you're managing a lot of staff and you keep giving them little minute, let's not say little minute details, because that's all important in the culture part of it, but if they have to worry about, you know, selling the hand pad, and then they also have to worry about trying to sell the t-shirt and trying to, you know, they have all these little things. They'll fill up all day working on that and, like, forget to go work on, like, prepping Mr. Jones for the renewal. Or, you know, something really makes a lot of difference, you know, so.
Well, and if there's a... I think it's Harvard Business Review article. I'll send you guys if I can find it. It's called The Folly of Rewarding B While Hoping for A.
Right.
And, you know, I remember years ago when I had the guys, we're all on a percentage that included retail. And, in fact, it was Frank. He couldn't seem to make his numbers on enrollments or renewals, but he's very proud that he sold a boxing gym that month. All right, you know, about ring, right? So the catalog, whichever catalog it was, had a ring in it. So he sold somebody a $3,000 boxing ring, literally. It's like, are you kidding me? Let's see, our cost is $1,800. Shipping is $500. You're really proud that you made $800 gross profit, but you didn't get them renewed. But so you've got to be careful about what they're paying attention to. But the retail.
We have to manage what they're paying attention to. I mean, you have to manage what they focus on. And if you point their eyes this way, that means their eyes can't be going that way. And they're not us, right? So they can't change their beliefs in a second and all that stuff. They're kind of like a train, and they're on tracks. And the tracks you put them on, you put them on. So, you know, you got to look at
them. Well, and my story for that is watching my $25,000 family renewal walk out the door while Mrs. Jones wanted to try on the third size of foot pads to make sure Joey had the right foot pad, right? So here's a $22 sale get in the way of a $25,000 sale. You got to be very careful about that. So this is all pretty straightforward otherwise, but what I don't see on this particular sheet is new monthly payment and contract amount, unless I'm missing that somewhere. Yeah, it's got revenue, but it doesn't have contract numbers. So we should update that. Does everybody understand what the two are? Contract amount is literally the sum total. So if they're going to pay 200 times 12 months, and they pay $400 down, that's $2,800 in contract amount. And new monthly payment is literally the bump in payment that they're going to start with next month, right? So they're going to do $200 a month. That's a new monthly payment. If they're paying $200 down, they're going to go to $350. It's $150 a month.
Cash versus accrued, essentially.
What's that?
It's essentially cash versus accrued.
Total.
Well, this is short term. This is long term. So this is what they're should be what we're going to expect each month. This is the sum total, right?
Oh, it is. It has intro one, inquiry intro one.
See, here's the big red flag.
Difference would be
the big red flag is when
your percentage intro one to intro
your cash
two.
Is here, but your contract is here, right? Nicholas used to call it living off fast lane. And like the mass training thing, they never focused on contractor billing. So I could have cash that was way up here only because I cashed out like four old students but wouldn't put enough new people in the door to keep it going. So 90 days later, I could be out of business and I've got more cash than I've ever had in my life, right? There were a bunch of those guys who all of a sudden they got fixated on how much money they were putting in the bank today, but they weren't focusing on enrollment renewal, and the next extrapolation of that is new monthly payment and contract amount. So if you're not focusing on what the future looks like, it's easy to just feel, you know, fat, dumb, and happy until you don't have anything more to work on. Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Albert, is there an average percentage of people who don't fulfill a longer-term contract? So if you're renewing them all the way to second degree, at what percent, at what point do they decide, have another activity, not for me? Do they abandon that contract?
Yeah, it almost comes back to what Eric's question was. I have numbers that we know across the industry is I would guesstimate the average monthly dropout rate in this room to be around 4%. Maybe some of you are a little lower than that, and I would guesstimate the industry to be 7 to 9%. Okay, and Toby would guesstimate it's worse than that. Master Clark says that across ATA it's 7%. So
yeah, but they have half their shit together.
Well, I know. So that means the industry is at least 10%, right? So that having been the case in macro, right? Now the question is there a difference between somebody who's enrolled month to month versus enrolled for a year versus enrolled for 36 months? And I would say there is, although there's a limit to it, right? The other thing is there a difference between somebody who's enrolled for a goal like black belt versus enrolled for 12 months? And, my assumption is, by looking at real numbers for a lot of years, is once they're enrolled for black belt, they're much less likely to drop out than if they're enrolled for 12 months or 24 months. So now let's say on average, let's say that I'm right across the industry. So they're enrolled to black belt, let's say their monthly dropout rate is 2%. And they're not enrolled to black belt, let's say their monthly dropout rate is 7%. Right? So if the term of the contract is 36 months, 2% a month, that means that, you know, on average you're going to get all of it paid on that one. The term of the contract 72 months means on average you're going to get about 36 months. Right? So either way, you know, you just have to go off those percentages. And my guesstimate would be a quality school, somebody in this room, once they're renewed to black belt, you're probably in the 1 to 2% range, and before they're renewed to black belt, you're in the 6 or 7% range. Does that sound about right?
It sounds right to me.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound right. Just looking at the numbers, it doesn't sound right, because let's ignore everyone who's not renewed to black belt.
So right.
Let's imagine your active count is just people who've renewed.
Okay.
So take a school with an active count of 100 people who are renewed.
Right.
What do you think their dropout rate should be?
Less than 2%.
So less than 2%. So what that means is that given time, and how many new students is that school enrolling into the program in a given month? Enrolling into black belt and renewing, let's say, 100 students a school.
If they have 100, they're probably doing 4 or 5 more.
Okay, so if they're doing 5...
Well, I don't know if that's true. No, let's see.
Well, but...
Who's got the tightest closing ratio in here of renewals? What's your closing ratio?
98% right now.
Okay.
But you can see by the growth that I've had in the last 9 months.
Meteoric.
Yeah.
So let's go with 80% of people who enroll upgrade.
Well, that's okay. That's not normal.
Yes.
50%?
That's an outlier. You 50%? Said, Eric, you're good. You said 40%?
Kids, we do 30 to 40%. Adults, 60, 65%.
Yeah.
Give me a number.
Well, that's good.
Okay, so
let's say on average somebody knows the system pretty well but is doing it normally is maybe 20%.
Okay, so, and they're enrolling 10 students a month, let's say, so they're renewing 2 a month?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if they're renewing 2 a month and like 2% dropout, they should end up with 100 students in leadership. And that's a great year.
Well, that's the equal.
How do you get that?
That's what they're
I mean, in order to get to in order to get to 100 people in leadership, that's going to take what, 7 years? No, not quite that.
Well, we started with 100, didn't we? You said we started with 100 active in leadership. You said. So that's the break.
Yeah. So if you have 100 in leadership and you're renewing 2 a month and you're dropping out 2% a month, you're staying even.
Yeah, you'll grow 200. You'll grow 100 students in leadership.
Yeah.
Hey, Robin, how many?
No matter how many you start.
Do you have an operating system in your Dick Watson?
Not yet.
Well,
eventually.
Oh, so,
you do. Yeah. So how many people in your karate group?
Yeah. Karate program is at 160.
No, because you're not considering the people who sign up who you don't get into leadership. Some of those are dropping.
No, I took them out of the equation.
Well, you did.
I took, because rather than count 10 students come in the room, I count 2.
Yeah.
It's
Okay, so what do you think is off?
Well,
the point that you reach equilibrium is you have a number of equilibrium and you want to close a little more.
Right.
So what you're saying is you should be balancing out about 200
a lot of them.
Well, if you take Robert's number, because he's doing a high percentage, you take Sterling's number. They're, you know, they've got a, you know, hockey stick growth curve.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Their number specifically is they'll balance out in the last 2% 20 moments a month, 6% dropout, 5 or 6%, 5.5%, about 320 is where you're on the plane. You're getting 20, you're getting 20.
Right.
That's if you're doing, but then the 5.5%. But let's look at you have a good upgrade rate, and then we have to take a look. Let's say that they're upgrading half of those guys, right? Now they should be adding 150 a year into their leadership, right? So 150 years, 12 a month. At 12 a month, given time.
Where do you come up with 150?
300, and they're signing for 300 a year, is what he said. And
let's say they're doing well, signing 200 a year. That's good.
Okay, signing 200 a year.
So if they're upgrading half of them, that's 100
new ones a year.
So that's 8 a month.
And let's just say they're in a 4-year program.
Yeah.
You're not ending up suddenly with 400 leadership kids 4 years later. You're lucky if you still have 200. So what I'm just saying is, no matter whether you upgrade them or not,
I don't agree with that. Looking at our schools over the years, is, you know, we only moved them into level 1, 2, and 3 once they were in leadership or master club, and the ratio historically has probably been mostly it's about middle level schools 60-40 going into the higher program, lower level schools maybe, you know, 40 or 50% into the higher level. And but I mean, everybody outside the orientation was in leadership, and so a school of 300 active might have 50 that weren't in leadership, they were in orientation, and 250 that were in leadership.
Can you come up with yourself?
Yeah, I can get tonight or tomorrow the Sterling numbers. And Robert, you might have your numbers. But
I have only got to April on the computer.
Yeah, but you know, we're talking about a 5-year time span, not a 5-month time span. 5 months is soon.
Well, at Christmas, the Sterling School only had 25 out of 300 active that weren't already renewed.
Okay.
In the entire school.
Totally can believe that. Yeah. What I can't believe is that they'll have a 2%
drop. No, but that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting you can't enroll 60, 70, 80%.
Right.
I'm just suggesting if you do that, statistically, if you really look at it, your dropout rate is still about the same as had they not upgraded. It has to be, or otherwise your schools would just be burgeoning with students.
Well, I don't think it goes to zero, but I think it goes down pretty dramatically.
I mean, there's certainly some influence, but it's not like, oh, if you upgrade them, now there's an 80% bigger retention rate. Maybe it's 20%. Somebody should play the numbers out, because I've...
His spreadsheet does.
I've done it in the past, but it, you know, I don't have it at the top of my head. I just know every time I've looked at it.
But it gets back to, I think you had the question, if you upgrade them, it doesn't mean all of a sudden they're going to be there 4 years later. Most of them are not.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you try to do a great job, which we all do.
Right. I mean, I guess not to really belabor the point or to be a complete contrarian, but, and I'm not trying to say this, right, as someone who has 2,000 students, and Master Oliver actually did this in one of our seminars when he was in MS, actually, it really doesn't matter what we're, you know, whether we get to the statistical understanding or not, our job hasn't changed any. So you still have to close it, right? I just want to, whatever we come up with, at the end of wherever we're about to go, where we've been going with this, our job didn't change at all.
Well said.
We need to sign as many people as possible, create the greatest number of student value as possible, try to keep them as long as possible. Right. Whatever numbers you're currently achieving, where your values are higher than mine, my retention percentage is better than yours, you get more enrollments or I get more enrollments or whatever, our job hasn't really changed.
Right.
So that's, to be honest, what I'd recommend being the...
Well, let me add to that, though, is the other piece of it, though, is let's assume that Eric's hypothesis is exactly right. Okay? And...
What is Eric's hypothesis?
Well, Toby, let's say it's not exactly the way he's saying it, but I'm going to overstate the case. Whether they're enrolled for a year or they're enrolled for 4 years, their average monthly dropout rate is going to be the same. Okay? So let's say that that's a true hypothesis. Well, the predominant premise that we're focusing on is the whole idea of it being an upgrade. Okay? And the upgrade meaning if I'm here for 12 months and I'm paying $200 a month, or if I'm here for 12 months and I'm paying $400 a month, where do I make more money? Right? So let's assume that the other piece doesn't hold any water, which I, you know, historically I know the numbers, it does improve the retention pretty dramatically, okay? But let's, and by the way, Nick Okinas would argue the opposite. He'd say you sign up for a four-year contract, they're much more likely to drop out, because the only number he was ever looking at was a delinquency rate based on the term of the contract, right? So if they're enrolled for 12 months and they pay 12 months, or if they're enrolled for 48 months and they pay 30 months, you know, to him, these are the ones that went bad. But, see, I don't care about that. Yeah, I'm just looking at, you know. But let's say that that's true, right? So let's say the dropout rate doesn't change, but in the first 2 months I can upgrade them and get them to pay an extra $150. And statistically they're all going to be gone in 12 months. Well, I'm better off.
Right.
With a student who over a year paid me $4,000. It's also, by the way, it's the argument for prepaids, right? And I've said it over and over and over again over the years, but if you take like a school like Buzz's, if I could get him to do cash deals, which he won't do, he would do a little bit more cash than he's doing now, because some people would have prepaid for lessons they didn't take. For most schools, cash dramatically jumps their gross, because instead of somebody, well, not long term. So if I'm doing a 4 year deal paid in full, statistically, usually I'm getting 25, 30, or 40% more money, right? Which goes back to support your hypothesis. Because if they would have statistically paid for 18 months and now they prepay for 48 months minus a 20% discount, I got a lot more money, right? And what also happens in many cases, they prepaid, so therefore they come longer because they didn't. You know, one reason they drop out is dad lost his job or the car broke down and we need the money. And so it eliminates that one excuse. Doesn't eliminate any of the others, but eliminates that one excuse, right? So, but, and as Mike said so well, is still the reason I focus on this is I want to know that next month I just added $150 in revenue from this one student, right? And so cumulatively, I got the short-term revenue up. Okay, just focus on this is assuming that most of it's going to be collected. My focus on this is, you know, I'm more concerned about what the short-term revenue difference is going to be.
And sir, I'm sorry to jump back in, but just so my emphasis in saying as someone who has 2,000 students wasn't to say so I know better than them. Got to that point. And where retention has served us well, right? We've kept a large number of people for a longer time. I'm still trying to figure out how can I keep them longer? How can I charge them more? How can I enroll more people per month? It hasn't stopped at all, you know, even though we've done okay on those metrics. That was my point of saying.
And that's really my point, too. It doesn't matter what state you live in. If you upgrade them for 12 months, 24 months, 60 months, they're going to stay the same amount of time. But his point is exactly
right. That's
trying to get your revenue, whatever they do stay, you maximize.
Right, get the main message out of the upgrade system, which is it may be a better tool for getting.
And if you argue the opposite side, the other end of the spectrum, is if there's no psychological slash contractual commitment on the front end, we know that the retention rate, the attrition is much higher.
Right.
That's why, so yeah, exactly.
Like what you just oversimplified, I'm not saying there's no effect.
Right.
I'm just saying it's not as big as sometimes I think we're led to believe.
Right. Well, I think that the numbers we looked at with Jonathan were skewed towards the low end.
Yeah.
Well, clearly, because there's a self-selecting sample.
Right.
But I was just surprised when I ran the numbers, like, how skewed.
Right.
You know, I thought, boy, if I could just upgrade people, it's going to save my retention rate.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's going to play out in the long run, because I'm going to start upgrading people who aren't quite as self-selecting once I get to 60, 70, 80%.
The percentage will get worse and worse and worse as you go, as you do a higher and higher percentage of them. But it's not going to equal that. If you compare, let's say that you were doing six-month contracts, okay? And now you go to, we're doing a renewal to black belt, then a renewal to second degree. Mm-hmm. The question is if I'm doing a month-to-month or six-month contract over and over and over again, will there be a difference if I walk them through a psychological process and commitment and get them commitment to the black belts? And I would say every time that this will have a better retention rate than this will. Okay? Right. This will have a higher percentage of contracts who default sooner or later, because if I get them to, on average, 24 months rather than on average to 15 months, right? But over the long term, I think they're going to be much more committed to it. The other thing that I think that, and again, Toby, you looked at Harvard's numbers recently. What's their number?
87%.
Okay. So in Harvard's case, 87% of the people who enroll end up graduating with their bachelor's degree in 4 years. Okay. So let's assume it's hard to get better than that. I don't know what West Point is. Did you look at West Point? You know, the service academies are a little skewed because they basically have a 2 year and out.
You're locked in, baby.
Well, no. Not for 2 years.
Yeah.
You can go for 2 years and drop out, or once you go into your junior year, you're committed for 6 years, I think is the deal. So like Nick Okinas is one of them. He went to West Point for 2 years and decided he didn't want to stay there and transferred to Georgetown. So because he didn't want to be locked into the Army. But that I'm sure skews it a little bit. But so if you look at that, I mean, that's probably as good as you get, right? I mean, I had to jump through a lot of hoops to get there. We're paying $50,000 a year, and you know, it's hard to assume that anybody's going to get better than that. So 13% over 4 years, 2% a year. I mean, it's hard to imagine you get better than that in anything. But then the question is if you see part of where I think the industry screws up is we treat it like a fitness center, not treating it like a school. So if you're not talking to them about the goal, about graduation, about the long term, what they're trying to accomplish, about the targets and goals, and you're talking about to them about enrolling for 6 months at a time or 12 months at a time like a fitness center, I think you screw up their thinking about it, right? And you really want it to be where, you know, mom doesn't want him to be the equivalent of a high school dropout. And it's not okay to drop out when you're a red belt. You've committed to get your black belt. You want to get your black belt. You want to have all those pieces of it tied in. And that's where I would say there is a difference. It may not be it drops by, you know, 100%, but it, you know, I've always seen our dropout rate at least half on the ones who are renewed versus the ones that aren't.
Yeah, but it's like if you asked a Harvard freshman, okay, you do have to sign away that you're going to pay for the next 4 years.
Yeah.
It's probably not going to have a huge change on the actual dropout rate. That's all I'm saying. It will have some.
Well, yeah, but see, that's where I think we're different. Because nobody goes through all the processes to get into Harvard with the idea they're not going to stay there, that they're going to check it out until midterms.
Right.
Right? Where we don't come with that advantage. And so we've got to, you know, set them up to think that way, right? So we want to start with the first couple of classes, and especially in the kids' market, the parents ring, I just wanted to try out karate for a while. You know, well, Mrs. Jones, this is a private school, and, you know, black belt's about 4 years at, you know, second degree black belt. We're going to see if he qualifies and can get admitted to that, and all of a sudden you start taking it away and you get them to think about that. And then if they jump through the hoops and beg to get in, I think it changes the psychology of the kid and the family. Now, there's nothing we can do about they lost their job, they moved to Boise, Idaho, or, you know, mom had a nervous breakdown, or, you know, dad got hit by a truck. So we can't fix any of those things. And a fair number of the people who drop out is stuff that are completely out of our control. And then there's a fair number of people who drop out because they were gone to grandmother's for three months, and we didn't, knock on their door and send them cookies and call them 12 times. So, we've got to look at the things that we can control and not worry about things we can't control. Why don't we take a 5-minute potty break and then back at it?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
That personality test you did?
Yes.
There's a bunch of T's.
Yeah, there are. There are.
bunch of F's
and
just over here.
And again, the F's over here are going, I don't feel held enough today.
That's right. I'm not smart enough to make sense of all the numbers, so I don't focus on.
Can we have all you thinkers over here come hug all these?
Yeah, I'm not smart enough.
I'm not hugging you, Dave.
I think you summed it up.
Oh, man.
We have to do the same no matter what.
It doesn't really. Well, and the part that I didn't get to say at the very end with this, the devil is in the details. An upgrade system half-assed, or an upgrade, right? If my, when I listened to the Jeff Smith call, did you hear that one? When they talked exactly about this, they're really darn good at it, or at least they're very, very darn thorough at it. So if they've got certificates and jump through and all these hoops that you've got to jump through, it wouldn't surprise me that they're better at the upgrade
system. You probably instill in most of your students relatively early the goal of learning practice.
Absolutely.
So it's irrelevant what program they're in, how long they sign up.
Right. Yeah.
You're teaching them to reach the same
level. Right. And still, you've got that